good morning again. Tom will be starting a new small group this Wednesday night. It is called Between Two Trees. It's working through a book by Dr. Shane Wood. He is a professor at Ozark Christian College. If you want to know anything about the book, it is a great look at why the world is the way it is, I guess, is the best way to put it. But anyway, it deals with why life is the way it is, but also it deals with the hope that we have of the resurrection and the coming of the new heavens and the new earth. And it's not a difficult read, and if you are able, I would encourage you that it is a great book, and I'm sure it will be a great study to be a part of. We meet at 6 o'clock. We try to be done by 7. Tom generally tells me that I have to be quiet soon enough that we're done by 7, and that's coming up. Other than that, Easter is in just a few weeks, and we will have a sunrise service at 7:30 on Easter morning, followed by some breakfast and a second service. And we would just invite you to make plans to attend, either or both. I won't preach the same sermon twice, so if you want to come to both, like I will, that's great. Otherwise, we just invite you to come for one of those services and celebrate the resurrection of the Lord together. We will be in Numbers chapter 23 this morning as we continue our progression through the pages of Scripture, as we continue through the story of what God is doing. At this point, the nation of Israel is getting ready to make their entrance into the Promised Land for the second time. They tried the first time and they decided they couldn't go, and now they're getting close to going in the second time. Well, actually it'll be the first time they go in, but this is the second chance they have to go in. And so we've made this progression. We're almost 40 years through wandering in the wilderness with Israel. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. It's just a couple of weeks, a couple of months at the most. But it's been almost 40 years, and the shoes haven't worn out, the clothes haven't worn out. God's doing some great things. I just have to ask you this morning, how many times in your life have you had a close call? Maybe you can recall a time when if you'd have been just a little earlier, you'd have been in an accident. Or maybe it's the other way around, and you happen to get sick and go to the doctor, and because you went in, they caught the disease early. They caught cancer early because you broke a bone. They caught something else going on because you went in for something different, but they found it early, and so they could do something for it. Or maybe you were a little early getting to something, and because you were there early, you got to see something or got to experience something you never thought you would get to do. How many times have you had a close call in life? You see, we've all had them. I often think about one in my own life. Brenna, Logan, and I were on our way somewhere. It was a day, well, it was about this time of year, but it wasn't anything like today. We'd had a snowstorm, and the roads were getting clear, but they weren't clear yet, and we had taken off for somewhere, but for some reason, something happened, and we were delayed just a few seconds at home. We forgot something in the house and had to run back in and get it, or something. There was a reason that we were delayed for just a few seconds. It it was no big deal. I was probably fretting. At that point in life, if we were 2 seconds late, we were really late. But it really wasn't a big deal. But we were heading south out of the little town that we lived in, and we lived north of the Missouri River. As you left our house and went south, you got into the very rolling hills. They were quite steep, and you would come up to the top of them, and you would just go back down the other side in several places. And we were coming up to one of those places, and we were getting up towards the top of the hill, and all of a sudden, coming over the top of the hill from the other side was the snowplow, taking up his share of the road right out of the middle. Well, not quite, but his plow was well into our side of the highway. He was evidently cleaning off the center line. The problem was as you came up this hill, I'm sure he couldn't see us, because I know this, we couldn't see him. If we had been just a few seconds earlier, I hate to think what would have happened, because as it was, I was able to move over to the shoulder of the road and we were safe. But I hate to think what would happen if we'd have been just a couple seconds sooner, where we would have met that snowplow at the top of that hill. You see, a few seconds can make all of the difference. A little bit of this or a little bit of that. And it reminds me that there's a lot that goes on in this world that we don't know about. There's a lot that happens that we don't see. Well, Numbers chapter 23 is, well, 22, 23, 24 are one of my favorite accounts of history in all of the Scriptures. I love this account because it starts with Israel. Israel is coming up to the Promised Land, and Moab and Midian see them and are fearful. Now, Moab forgets that Israel had asked permission to go through Moab and promised to even buy the water or anything they ate. They said, "We won't take anything, but if we do, we'll pay you for it." And Moab said no, and so Israel takes the long way around and comes in from the west instead of coming up from the south into the area that they will use to progress into the Promised Land across the Jordan River. Moab is a little bit fearful, so Moab and the Midianites, they send off to hire this guy named Balaam. Now, Balaam is, well, he's a little bit diviner, he's a little bit prophet, he's a little bit spiritual mercenary, and probably a little bit magician thrown in just for good measure. But Moab and Midian call him because he is the spiritual mercenary, the diviner, and they would like him to curse the nation of Israel. They want him to speak these words of demise over the nation of Israel, believing that if he speaks the word of demise, that Israel won't be a problem for them. Well, Balak, the king of Moab, sends some of his noble people to Balaam, and Balaam prays, and God says, "Don't go with them." And so Balaam says, "I can't go." And so the noble guys go home, and Balak is still concerned, so he sends some people of a higher rank, some people of greater nobility, and he sends them to Balaam. And Balaam again goes to God, and God says, "Go with them." And so Balaam accompanies them, and on their way, three different times, Balaam's donkey stops. Well, okay, the first time it moves a little out of the way. The second time it pushes his foot against the wall. And the third time it just stops and sits down underneath of him. And Balaam is mad. Just furious at his donkey. And then the donkey talks. Who doesn't like a talking donkey? And it doesn't sound like donkey off of Shrek, I'm sure. But this donkey talks to Balaam. And then Balaam and the nobles and Balaam's servants finish their journey and they come to Balak. And that's where we find ourselves this morning. Balaam is with Balak and he is there to carry out the task at hand. And beginning at verse 1 of chapter 23, this is what Moses records about the incident. Balaam said, "Build me 7 altars here and prepare 7 bulls and 7 rams for me." Balak did as Balaam said, and the two of them offered a bull and a ram on each altar. Then Balaam said to Balak, "Stay here beside your offering while I go aside. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet with me. Whatever He reveals to me, I will tell you." Then he went off to a barren height. God met with him, and Balaam said, "I have prepared 7 altars, and on each altar I had offered a bull and a ram." The Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, "Go back to Balak and give him this word." So he went back to him and found him standing beside his offering with all the Moabite officials. Then Balaam spoke this message: "Balak brought me from Aram, the king of Moab, to the eastern mountains. Come," he said, "curse Jacob for me. Come, denounce Israel. How can I curse those whom God has not cursed? How can I denounce those whom the Lord has not denounced? From the rocky peaks I see them, from the heights I view them, I see a people who live apart and do not consider themselves one of the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number even a fourth of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous, and may my final end be like theirs." Balak said to Balaam, "What have you done to me? I brought you here to curse my enemies, but you have done nothing but bless them." He answered, "Must I not speak what the Lord has put in my mouth?" I struggled with this sermon this week trying to decide what Moses was trying to tell the people of Israel. And while talking donkeys are great things, and while we learn something about what God can use to speak to us, I hope God never has to use a donkey to speak to you. I hope you listen before the donkey starts talking. But even Jesus said, if these are quiet, the stones will cry out. I hope that you're not one of the ones making the stones cry out because you won't listen to the message. And that is a great sermon, and that's a great point from the account that Moses records. But as I studied, as I read, and as I tried to write the words that I thought we needed to hear, that wasn't what I thought was the most important. And I tried to write a couple of other things, and in fact, I had a different sermon pretty much written and started trying to type it out, and it didn't feel right, it didn't sound right, it didn't sit well. And I began to see that one of the things that Moses is telling us is that there are some things that we don't see. You see, there's a whole unseen realm of things that are taking place that we don't understand, that we don't fully comprehend. Oh, we can pretend to, we can imagine that everything is in our control and we know everything, but But the truth of the matter is we don't. You see, here are the Israelites. The Israelites are making their progression to the promised land, but they have no idea what's taking place just on the other side, just up on top of a mountain, just on the other side of the border of the Moabites and the Midianites. They don't know what's going on. There is this unseen battle that's taking place that the Israelites at this moment don't realize that they are fighting, that they are a part of. You see, Balak is scared. Balak is fearful. He's seen what Moses and the Israelites have done with the help of God to the Amalekites. They see what God has been doing for 40 years for the Israelites as they have been marching around the desert. Marching may not be quite the right word. It's like a camping trip, and they've gone from one RV park to the next and stopped along the way and spent some time. But they've been going around the desert like this for 40 years, and the Moabites and the Midianites, they've heard the story of what God has done for the Israelites in bringing them up out of Egypt. How many of you know what happens to a good story over time? It gets bigger, and it gets bigger. Now, if you lived in Egypt, the story probably got smaller and smaller, but if you lived outside of Egypt, the story just kept getting bigger and bigger, I'm sure. With every year, every few months, the story got a little bigger because, well, that's how things work. And so Balaam and Balak are here. They're doing their work up on top of the mountain. And Balak's hope is that the battle will be won without there ever having to be a fight. He hires Balaam for the purpose of cursing the Israelites, of speaking these words against them so that he won't have to worry about them. And I'm reminded that, you know, the story isn't about what's seen. The story is really about what's unseen. The story is about a battle that's taking place, about an enemy that we never see. You see, often we look at life and we look at people around us and we think they're the enemy. We see people that we disagree with and they're the enemy. We see people who don't like us, who dress differently than us, who look differently than us, that speak a different language than us, who come from a different part of the world than us, and we see them as the enemy. And so you hear about things like a massacre at mosques. You hear about shootings at a church. You hear about bombs at a synagogue. You hear about these kinds of things because we look at other people who aren't like us and we think they're the enemy. But what the story of Balaam and Balak reminds us is that we have an enemy that is not seen. We have an enemy that we do not see. Our enemy is spiritual. You see, Moab had nothing to be afraid of from Israel. Israel had already tried to go through Moabite territory, and when Moab said no, Israel said, okay, we're not going to bother you. This would just be the easier way for us, but since you said no, we'll make other arrangements, we'll make other plans. And it's been months, it's been several months since they asked for permission. And they have made this great big large loop around Moab. And they haven't bothered Moab one bit. But yet Moab is scared. And they called the prophet Balaam to work. Because it isn't about what we see. Paul says this in his letter to the Ephesians. In Ephesians chapter 6, beginning with verse 10, Paul says this. He says, "Finally, brothers, be strong in the Lord and in His mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Therefore, put on the full armor of God so that on the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground, and after you have done everything, to stand." You see, Paul is telling the church at Ephesus that it isn't a physical battle. Yeah, we see things. There are people who might stand against us, but we have to remember that if we pull back the curtain to what's really taking place, the people aren't the issue. You see, our enemy stands behind people and bolsters them to do his work. The other thing that this tells us about the enemy and the unseen is it's a reminder that we're in a battle. You see, we're in a battle. There is a very real war that's going on around us. Israel was a part of this war and they didn't even understand it. And I think too often we're a part of this war and we don't understand, we don't comprehend the gravity of the battle that's taking place around us. We don't understand the nature of the war and we don't understand the part that we're playing because we don't want to be in the war. We want to be sitting at home in comfort. We want to be going about our business in peace, but the story of Balaam and Balak reminds me that there is a battle. Our enemy is unseen and the battle is real. Peter gives us an understanding of that unseen battle in chapter 5 of his first letter to the church. And he says this, he says, "Be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour." You see, we're in a battle. And our enemy is out there. He's unseen and he is moving and observing and watching and waiting for the right moment, the right time, when we are weak, when we are not prepared, and he's waiting to take us out. You see, that's what Balaam was hoping Balak would do, is that he would minimize the Israelites through this curse, and he would be able to wipe them out, and it wouldn't be an issue for him. Because Satan wanted to rid himself of the nation of Israel because he knew just enough. He knew just enough to know that God was up to something. He may not have understood the whole plan, but he knew that God was up to something, and he knew that the nation of Israel was where God was going to work. And so Satan was seeking to destroy them. And the problem with the battle is we often don't recognize it. We often don't see it because it looks like entertainment. It looks like security. It looks like peace. It looks like comfort. It looks like a regular week. But there's a battle going on. Paul says this to the church at Corinth. in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, he says, "For such people are false prophets, deceitful workers, masquerading as apostles of Christ." And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. It's not surprising, then, if his servants also masquerade as servants of righteousness. Their end will be as their actions deserve. Satan masquerades as an angel of light. He tries to make things that are dark and sinister look good. He tries to make the twisted, misused ways that he takes the good gifts of God, and he tries to make them look normal. He makes them look appealing, and the purpose and the reason is, it is, well, if you saw a device sitting in the street that you knew was going to kill you, you wouldn't go play with it. But if you see something that looks beautiful, you might pick it up and be destroyed. And so Satan is fighting this battle. We're part of this war that's raging around us. And Satan, the father of lies, the one who wants to see us destroyed, as Jesus said, that Satan was a murderer from the beginning in John chapter 8. In John chapter 10, he says that the thief comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. You see, Satan is only here for the purpose of taking us out, to destroy us. And he takes the good things that God has given and he teaches us to misuse them and abuse them. He twists them and maligns them, so that we will fall in the battle. You see, we don't see our enemy. We don't understand the battle, but it's real. The Israelites couldn't see, and in fact, later Moses had to either be told by God through the Spirit, or somebody else had to have been a witness to these events and shared them with Moses, so that Moses understood the battle that had been taking place in the hills of Moab. And Moses records them so that the people of Israel in the generations to come would see that the battle was real, even when they couldn't see it. But there's something else that we see in this, and that is the fact that God turns the curses into blessings. God gives blessings for curses. You see, God changed in this situation, God changed the curses into blessings. Balak was hired to come and to pronounce curses, but when it comes time, instead of speaking curses, Balaam speaks blessing. Instead of speaking words of demise and destruction, he speaks words of strength and power and growth. He speaks words of blessing. And God can change the curses into blessings. That's what Paul says in Romans chapter 8, 28, where he says, "God causes all things to work together for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purposes." It doesn't say that He takes us out of the curses. It doesn't say that He always keeps the curses from coming. But rather, Paul says that even when the bad things in life happen, God can, if we will let Him, God can use them for our benefit. That God can take the what seems to be awful, terrible things in this life and turn them into good. Now, we don't always understand and we don't always see the good that's taking place in those times, but God will work them out for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purposes. It doesn't mean that the situations don't still stink. It doesn't mean that the pain isn't real and the heartache isn't real. It just means that if we give them over to God, He can bring benefit out of them. The greatest example of that is what we see in the life of Jesus Christ. Because Jesus Christ, on a day that we now call Good Friday, was hung on a cross. Late morning, Jesus was hung on a cross, and He hung there until mid-afternoon when He says, "It is finished," and He gives up His last breath. And then Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus take His body down off the cross, they prepare it for burial, and they lay it in an empty tomb. It's a bad situation, and I don't think that any of us have experienced what Jesus experienced on the cross. It wasn't just the physical pain. It was the emotional anguish. It was that moment when He was carrying out the work that He came to do, and knowing that there was a separation from the Father that He had never experienced before and will never experience again. And Jesus paid the price for our sins on the cross, and He dealt a death blow to our enemy when He rose from the grave on Easter morning. You see, God took what looked like a curse and He turned it into a blessing in raising Jesus Christ from the grave. He conquered sin and He conquered death. He came to disarm our enemy, and He did. He turned the curses into blessing. But sometimes He does like He did with the Israelites and with Balaam, and He protects us from the blessing or curses. He blesses us instead of allowing us to see the curses. In John chapter 17, verses 14 and 15, Jesus says, or praying to the Father on behalf of His disciples and on behalf of us, He says, "I have given them Your word, and the world has hated them, for they are not of this world any more than I am of this world. My prayer is not that You take them out of the world, that You protect them from the evil one." You see, Jesus is praying that we would be protected from our enemy. That the God would provide protection for us from our enemy. If we remain in Him, if we remain faithful to Him, He will protect us. It doesn't mean that He'll protect us from every bad thing that can happen in this world. It doesn't mean that the enemy won't take pot shots at us as we go about life. But what it does mean is that we know that if we remain faithful to Him, He will remain faithful to us, and we know that our salvation is sure. I like the words of the great old hymn by Martin Luther. And I really love it if you've got a good organ and a great organist. Any organ will do, but a good organ is better. And a great organist makes it so great when you hear the ringing sounds of "A mighty fortress is our God, a bulwark never failing." Because we serve a God who is there. And though we're fighting an enemy, our God is the safe place that we can go. And we know Jesus prayed for our protection. As I was going through this, I was reminded of a song that was co-written by Amy Grant in the early 1980s and recorded by her in the 1980s, called Angels. And in that song, I'm not sure that all of the theology is perfect, but the message is still great. She said, "Angels watching over me in the chorus, every move I make, angels watching over me. Angels watching over me every step I take, angels watching over me. God only knows the time today my life was threatened, God only knows the times my life was threatened just today. A reckless car ran out of gas before it ran my way. Near misses all around me, accidents unknown. Though I never see with human eyes the hands that lead me home, but I know they're all around me all day and through the night. When the enemy is closing in, I know sometimes they fight. To keep my fight from falling, I'll never turn away. If you're asking what's protecting me, then you're going to hear me say, angels watching over me." You see, the truth is we don't know what God is doing behind the scenes. We only see just the brief glimpse of everything that is. We see the physical, but we only see a small bit of even the physical that's all around us. And we can't see the spiritual that's taking place. But God is watching over us. You see, the Israelites didn't realize that Balak had hired Balaam to curse them. They didn't realize how close they were to the battle that was raging all around them. Because God was their fortress. God was their bulwark. God was their shield and their defender. And God is our shield and God is our defender. And we don't always see what He's doing and we don't always understand His purpose and His plan. We don't always understand what happens. But we know who's in control. This morning, if you don't know God as fortress, if you don't know God as your Savior, the one who has fought the battle for your soul and the soul of everyone else and has been victorious, we're going to sing one more hymn. And I would just invite you this morning that if you don't know Him, to come and to begin a conversation or to make a commitment, a decision to give your life to Him. If you're a follower of Jesus, let this morning be a great reminder that it isn't just driving home. It isn't just life. There's a battle raging around us. And today you may not be the target, but tomorrow you might. And today you might see somebody else who needs the strength and the encouragement because they have been the target of the enemy. But whatever the case, remember that God is greater than the enemy and God has won the victory. Let's stand together as we sing this next song together.
I've been here before. Now here I am again, standing at the door, praying You'll let me back in. Label me a prodigal would be, only scratching the surface of who I've been known to be. Thank you. lead me.